Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today we'll have details on what's open and what's closed after a lifting of a regional stay-home order due to COVID-19. Then, hear what the county's public health official and residents have to say about a large and largely maskless religious protest held in El Cajon in defiance of COVID-19 restrictions. Seeds of change are coming to La Mesa with a new community garden, and we'll have details. We have some good news on a missing Borrego man found safe and a request from the sheriff to help find a missing Potrero man who hasn't been seen since December. The Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, has issued its first ever nationwide import warning to block all hand sanitizers made in Mexico after dangerous levels of toxic methanol were found in many of these products. Invasive South American palm beetles are killing many of San Diego's iconic palm trees. Learn what to look for on today's show. From California News Service, we'll have a report on efforts to increase housing for seniors. President Joe Biden has rescinded a Trump-era ban on transgender people serving in the military. And from Public News Service, we'll have more national news stories, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi criticizing Republicans' appointment of Marjorie Greene to the Education Committee after Greene taunted a child survivor of the Sandy Hook School massacre. We'll also have news on more executive orders signed by President Biden, including reopening open enrollment in the Affordable Care Act health insurance, ending private prison contracts, and more. And then finally, we'll have some tips from San Diego District Attorney Summer Steffen and the FBI on how you can help keep your child or teen safe from predators online. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
At a press conference earlier this week, San Diego County leaders announced changes to allow some businesses to reopen after the state lifted a regional stay-home order. The change comes due to a four-week regional projection that ICU capacity will rise above 15%. Our county is now back in the purple tier, but with some modifications. A key change is that live entertainment is now allowed at restaurants, which can reopen for outdoor dining. Performers must be 12 feet from diners and other musicians. Wineries, bars, and distilleries that serve food can operate under restaurant rules, but those serving alcohol only must stay closed. Hair and nail salons, barbershops, tattoo parlors, and massage businesses can reopen for indoor service following COVID-safe protocols. Gatherings of three households or fewer are allowed outdoors with masks. Non-contact youth sports competitions can resume, such as track and field, golf, tennis, and swimming. Competitions are not allowed for contact youth sports, though teams can resume practice without direct contact, such as batting or fielding practice. Grocery stores can operate at 50% occupancy, retail at 25%, and hotels can reopen to the public. Certain other businesses, such as museums and drive-in theaters, can resume outdoor operations. Worship services can be held outdoors with masks and social distancing. Nathan Fletcher, chair of the County Board of Supervisors, stated, quote, "We can take a measure of pride in knowing that we've beaten back the most severe surge," end quote. New cases have dropped from over 4,000 daily to between 1,000 and 2,000 daily over the past week. But San Diego still has a long way to go to drop into the red tier, which would allow much broader reopening of businesses, a goal that can only be met if people avoid mass gatherings and continue to wear masks, wash hands, socially distance, and avoid risky behaviors. Although the post-holiday surge has passed, Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, cautions that there are new strains which spread more rapidly than the original strain of COVID-19. A great hope is rollout of vaccines, which are now available to people age 65 and up, as well as healthcare workers. Next will be frontline workers in childcare and education, first responders, and workers in food and agriculture. After that will likely be those age 50 to 64, Dr. Wooten says. In addition to super sites at Petco Park in Chula Vista, several other pod sites are now available across the county, including Grossmont Healthcare in East County. Reservations are required via the county's online site or by calling 211, though some seniors report difficulty getting appointments. Fletcher addressed a question from East County Magazine on county enforcement over potential super spreader events, such as an outdoor worship service in El Cajon that drew hundreds of people, most not wearing masks, including Mayor Bill Wells and Cajon Valley School Board member Jill Bartow. Fletcher responded, quote, "We understand there are a lot of forces out there, including elected officials advocating open defiance," end quote. He indicated that the county is investigating complaints and will issue cease and desist orders and, in some cases, public closure notices, following up through law enforcement as needed for businesses that do not comply. Dr. Wooten stated, quote, "There is an unfortunate irony that unsafe events only serve to increase the case count and punishes businesses and those who have lost loved ones." While the state's latest orders will bring some relief to beleaguered businesses, some argue that the changes don't go far enough. California Senate Republican leader Shannon Grove accused the governor of making a decision based on, quote, "secret data," while many businesses and schools have been shuttered for months. She adds, quote, "Californians deserve full transparency, especially when their life, livelihood, children's education, and mental health are being directly affected." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
The county's public health officer and many local residents are speaking out to criticize El Cajon's leadership after Mayor Bill Wells gave the opening prayer at a religious gathering on January 17th in Prescott Promenade downtown. The outdoor service drew hundreds of worshipers, nearly all of them without masks. The Let Us Worship Christian service and concert was organized by controversial evangelical musician Sean Fouched, a former Republican congressional candidate. He encouraged the crowd to yell as loudly as they could, despite medical evidence that singing and shouting at worship services has led to super spreader events and deaths. He also invited people to come on stage for a born-again ritual in which they were prayed over and hugged by faith leaders. The event was in direct violation of state and county COVID-19 regulations, held at a time when regional ICU capacity was zero and a stay-home order was in place due to surging COVID cases, including new rapidly spreading variants. The city did not issue a permit for the event. However, Mayor Wells has openly voiced support for defiance of regulations and told media previously that he asked the city manager to instruct police not to enforce violations of COVID-related health rules, such as businesses defying shutdown orders. El Cajon police officers were visibly present at the event, but they did nothing to shut it down or even enforce masking regulations. They also did not respond when a counter-protester dressed as the Grim Reaper was attacked and had his megaphone smashed. The San Diego Union-Tribune reports that the protester had been shouting, "How many people have you killed due to no mask at your events, Sean?" East County Magazine asked Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health official, for comments on the event during a county press conference this week. She stated, "There is an unfortunate irony that unsafe events only serve to increase the case count and punishes business and those who have lost loved ones." Nathan Fletcher, chair of the County Board of Supervisors, also voiced disapproval, but indicated the county is limited in its enforcement capacity in incorporated cities. "We understand there are a lot of forces out there, including elected officials, advocating open defiance," Fletcher said. He indicated that the county is investigating complaints and will issue cease and desist orders or closure orders for businesses that fail to comply. But the county has not taken action to stop potential super spreader events, including an earlier worship concert staged by Fouched at a North County beach. Mayor Wells has defended his stance by stating that he believes people need hope after months of quarantine. And as a mental health professional, he says he's concerned about the high rates of suicides, depression, and other problems caused by isolation. We emailed the other four city council members in El Cajon to ask if they had any concerns or planned to take action to compel enforcement of COVID-19 rules. Three did not respond. A fourth, Gary Kendrick, said he is concerned but does not have the votes from any of his colleagues to take action. The public has mixed views on the matter. Mike Nelson of San Diego, who attended the event, told the Union Tribune he came after seeing lives changed and people getting saved and healed at similar events. But on Facebook, many El Cajon residents posted scathing criticisms. Donald Williams wrote, "The mayor is a shining example of why this pandemic, especially in El Cajon, will be uncontrolled until 2025. Linda Armacost said of those in attendance, "They may see God sooner than they expected." Several posted that they have stopped going to El Cajon to shop or to take out meals due to feeling unsafe because of the failure to enforce public health rules. Stacy Hoover praised San Diego's new mayor, Todd Gloria, who just announced increased enforcement actions in their city to assure compliance with COVID-19 rules. Hoover wrote, "Too bad he's not also mayor of El Cajon." She slammed El Cajon's mayor and other elected officials who attended the event, which she contends is killing people. "That is why my kids can't go to school," adds Hoover, a former candidate for the Cajon Valley School District Board. The district, in El Cajon, has had 540 cases since September 9th, according to the district's website. Jill Bartow, a trustee on the Cajon Valley School Board, attended the religious rally, not wearing a mask, and posted photos on her Facebook page. Steve Roback, an elected member of the Lakeside Water District, scornfully dismissed concerns voiced by many over the lack of masks. On Facebook, he likened those who wear masks to sheep and taunted, "Bah, do as you're told." El Cajon has had 10,373 cases of COVID-19 since the pandemic began last March. The city's cases account for 4.8% of the county's total cases. El Cajon also has the second highest case rate in the county, with 9,826.7 cases per every 100,000 residents. In other words, nearly one in every 10 people in El Cajon is confirmed to have had the coronavirus. But perhaps that's not surprising, given the city's abandonment of its responsibility to protect the public health amid the worst pandemic in over a century. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
La Mesa will soon have a community garden, slated to open in March. The city recently announced that the San Diego Foundation has granted $30,000 in seed money for the community garden, which will be located in MacArthur Park near the community center and La Mesa's downtown village. Another $10,000 in donations came from the San Diego chapter of the American Society of Landscape Architects, La Mesa Sunrise Rotary, the Cushman Foundation, EDCO, and a Lori McDonald at Coldwell Banker West. Josh Slotnick at a TED Talks from the University of Montana said of his time as an apprentice at the UC Santa Cruz Farm and Garden,
"It was the best educational experience I'd ever had. I was elevated by it. I never before felt so in tune with people and place. It was like I grew 2 inches and I was 26 years old."
According to Michelle Langdon, participants will be required to follow city guidelines for COVID-19. The garden beds will be 6 feet apart from each other to keep social distancing. Sanitation for shared tools will also be provided. Due to COVID-19 guidelines, in-person educational workshops and events will not be available, but the city is, however, considering creating some online alternatives. The public will be offered year-long leases through a lottery system. There will also be guidelines about what community members are allowed to plant in the garden. The garden is continuing to fundraise and has currently reached about 40% of its goal. For more information about the community garden or to donate to the fundraiser, visit lamesaparks.org/community-garden. Reporting from La Mesa, this is Jonathan Getz.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea. Public interest news for our region.
This is Brianna Gomez with the Health Alert. Over half of all hand sanitizers from Mexico have been found to contain toxic ingredients, many at dangerous levels, and 84% of samples tested failed to comply with FDA regulations. So on January 26th, the FDA announced a nationwide import alert on all hand sanitizers made in Mexico to prevent them from entering the U.S. until the agency can review product safety. This is the first time the FDA has issued a countrywide alert for any category of drug product. Many of the Mexican-made hand sanitizers contain methanol or wood alcohol, which is toxic when absorbed through the skin and life-threatening if ingested, or propanol, another dangerous substance. The FDA reports methanol poisoning from these products has caused blindness, heart trouble, effects on the central nervous system, hospitalizations, and death. Although people using these products on their hands are at risk for methanol poisoning, young children who ingest these products or adults who drink these products believing them to be alcohol substitutes are most at risk. Consumers exposed to hand sanitizer contaminated with methanol and are experiencing symptoms should contact their local poison control center and seek immediate medical treatment for potential reversal of the toxic side effects of methanol poisoning. Call 911 if the person is unconscious or has trouble breathing. To find a local poison control center, call Poison Help at 800-222-1222. The FDA encourages healthcare professionals, consumers, and patients to report adverse events or quality problems experienced with the use of hand sanitizers to FDA's MedWatch Adverse Event Reporting Program.
This is Jonathan Goetz with East County Magazine's Agricultural Report. The invasive South American palm weevil has destroyed an estimated 10,000 palm trees in our region, according to researcher Mark Hoddle at the University of California, Riverside. Locally, it's been found in El Cajon, Bonita, San Diego, and South Bay communities. The destructive weevil was first found in our region in 2010 in Tijuana, Mexico, and has since spread across our county and into Arizona. In San Diego County, the pest is primarily infesting Canary Islands date palms since its discovery here in 2011, but it is known to attack other species when Canary Islands date palms are not available. Left untreated, it will ultimately kill the iconic trees, best known for lining waterfronts along some of San Diego's most prominent waterfront tourist destinations. The adult South American palm weevils are black with wings. They measure about 1.5 inches long. Larvae are white and pupate in fibrous brown cocoons in the infested crown of the palm tree or in tunnels drilled by the insects into the base of palm fronds. Deep Look, in A Real Alien Invasion Is Coming to a Palm Tree Near You, puts it like this.
She lays her eggs down in those tunnels, and her spawn eat the palm from the inside out.
Early symptoms include damage to fronds emerging from the center of a palm tree's crown. Leaflets may appear clipped or notched. Once the palm heart is heavily damaged, the crown may tilt or collapse, dropping to the ground and posing a hazard to anyone underneath. So far, the only way to save the palms once infested is to apply systematic pesticides on a regular basis, though this may pose hazards to any wildlife that feeds on any part of the palm. Testing of several pesticides is currently underway. Consultation with an arborist is recommended. Removal of an infected palm tree is a more environmentally friendly option. Besides posing a threat to ornamental palms, state agricultural officials are concerned that the pest could spread to the Coachella Valley or other commercial date-growing areas, which produce $68 million worth of dates annually in California. Residents are asked to report any palms suspected of having South American palm weevils to the County Department of Agriculture and to researchers at the University of California, Riverside.
California faces an enormous shortage of affordable housing, and a group that advocates for older residents is looking for solutions. This week, AARP California has published a new report on the need for housing. It's the result of months spent convening experts and stakeholders to tackle the issue of affordability. AARP California Associate State Director Rafi Nazarians says the state can shore up support for affordable housing by reinvigorating the social compact between generations.
It refers to an implicit agreement between generations to share resources and support one another across phases of life.
The report found there's a strong perception that older adults tend to oppose affordable housing projects in their areas when they come up for local approval. AARP wants to reframe the issue, hoping to increase support among its millions of members for projects that allow everyone in a community to thrive. Nazarians says the research shows red tape is another huge obstacle to getting new housing approved and built because it can take years to comply with a thicket of environmental, land use, and zoning regulations.
The largest area of consensus was on the need for a much simplified process at all levels of government and at all junctures of development of affordable housing in California.
And the demand for affordable housing specifically designed for older adults is likely to increase. Statistics show by 2030, 1 in 3 Californians will be over age 50 and 17% will be over age 65. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, January the 28th, 2021. I'm Mike Clifford. CNN reports Speaker Nancy Pelosi Thursday slammed House Republican leaders for not doing more to rebuke GOP Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia over her shocking rhetoric and past statements. At her weekly news conference, Pelosi said, assigning her to the Education Committee when she has mocked the killing of little children at Sandy Hook Elementary School, when she has mocked the killing of teenagers in high school at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, what could they be thinking? This is PNS.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're tracking our democracy in historic times. President Joe Biden signed another executive order yesterday, this time for health care.
To undo the damage Trump has done. There's nothing new that we're doing here other than restoring the Affordable Care Act and restoring the Medicaid.
First, Biden is reopening enrollment in the ACA marketplaces to give more people a chance to get health insurance. Over 2.2 million lost theirs in the first 3 years of the Trump administration. The new period starts February 15th and is open till May 15th. The Biden administration is also reviewing former President Donald Trump policies, undermining protections for those with pre-existing medical conditions. Biden has told federal agencies to revise the Trump policies that made it harder to qualify for Medicaid, the public health insurance program for people with disabilities or low incomes, including potentially removing states' work requirements.
Of all times that we need to reinstate access to, affordability of, and extent of access to Medicaid, is now in the middle of this COVID crisis.
Medicaid enrollment has risen since the pandemic began, after dropping between 2017 and 2019, attributed to reduced funding for public outreach. Biden's executive order this week ending the federal use of private prisons did not include privately run immigration facilities, where the ACLU says, as of a year ago, 81% of people detained in ICE custody were held. One of the nation's largest is the Northwest ICE Processing Center in Tacoma, Washington. Maru Mora Villalpando is a community organizer with the group La Resistencia.
This is not the solution to the immigration detention enterprise that has been built. And now we have to push him and his entire administration to start phasing out private detention and ultimately close all detention centers.
Looking ahead, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi says she hopes to move a COVID relief package forward quickly.
I'll bring a budget resolution to the floor next week, and then it will send it over to the Senate. By the end of the week, we will be finished with the budget resolution, which will be about reconciliation, if needed. I hope we don't need it, but if needed, we will have it.
Budget reconciliation is a procedure which lets the Senate pass legislation with a simple majority, rather than the usual 60 votes required to end debate and get to a vote. It's only for bills that focus on federal budgetary spending or taxes and cannot include unrelated provisions. Yesterday, House Republican leader California's Kevin McCarthy met with former President Donald Trump in Florida to discuss the twice-impeached politician's plans for the 2022 midterm elections. After record-low approval ratings following the Capitol insurrection, a morning consult and Politico poll this week had 50% of Republican voters saying Trump should play a major role in the GOP going forward. Eric Tegedoff contributed reporting. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Laura Rosbrow-Tellum. Thanks for listening.
LGBTQ plus groups are celebrating President Biden's executive order reversing a Trump-era ban on transgender people in the military. The ban, which took effect in April 2019, prevented transgender people from enlisting, joining ROTC, or attending military academies. Rick Chavez-Zbur is with Equality California, which sued to stop the ban. He says the policy hurt individuals and the nation as a whole.
It was also harmful to the country because it deprived our country of talent and really harmed military readiness.
Former President Trump imposed the ban in July 2017, but it was tied up in litigation for 2 years until the Supreme Court allowed it to take effect. Trump argued that the military should not have to pay for people to go through the transition. Samuel Garrett Pate, also with Equality California, notes that a 2016 study by the RAND Corporation found that the costs of allowing transgender people to serve are negligible.
It's really sort of a red herring. The military covers the cost of health care for service members, period, full stop. And transgender people shouldn't be denied care any more than any other service member.
A UCLA study estimated that there were more than 15,000 transgender people on active duty as of 2014. The order also requires the Department of Defense to correct the record of anyone dismissed for their gender identity. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
San Diego District Attorney Summer Steffen warns that students who are spending more time online due to distance learning and COVID-19 are a captive audience for would-be human traffickers making contact on social media. So it's important to educate children and prevent them from falling victim to predators. Take these red flags seriously if your child or teen starts acting secretively, hiding what's on their computer screens or closing the door when online, if they talk vaguely of new friends without details, if they seem agitated when answering their phone or take calls in private, if they sneak out of the house, arrive home late, or lie about where they've been and who they've been with. Dressing up and wearing makeup to look older can be another red flag. So are unexplained expensive gifts such as money or clothes. Children and adolescents often do not feel vulnerable or understand what risks they may face from online or in-person victimization. The FBI recommends that parents review and approve games and apps before they are downloaded. Make sure privacy settings are set to the strictest level possible for social media, online gaming systems, phones, and other devices. Monitor your child's use of the internet and keep computers in a non-private room. Explain to your child that images posted online most likely will remain on the internet permanently. Teach your child about personal boundaries and awareness of their surroundings. And encourage open child-parent communication about internet safety. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Bueco, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine show here on KNSJ. I want to take a moment to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to hear our show, where we report news that matters to people across our region. In an era of cuts to many major media outlets, shrinking local news coverage, and cries of fake news attacking journalists with courage to report the truth, it's important to recognize and support KNSJ Radio. KNSJ gives airtime for original reporting on issues that matter here in San Diego and East County, as well as national news that impacts people here at home. You can donate to help support real news, honest reporting, and inclusion of your community's views and voices at knsj.org. That website again is knsj.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea. Public interest news for our region.
Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today we'll have details on what's open and what's closed after a lifting of a regional stay-home order due to COVID-19. Then, hear what the county's public health official and residents have to say about a large and largely maskless religious protest held in El Cajon in defiance of COVID-19 restrictions. Seeds of change are coming to La Mesa with a new community garden, and we'll have details. We have some good news on a missing Borrego man found safe and a request from the sheriff to help find a missing Potrero man who hasn't been seen since December. The Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, has issued its first ever nationwide import warning to block all hand sanitizers made in Mexico after dangerous levels of toxic methanol were found in many of these products. Invasive South American palm beetles are killing many of San Diego's iconic palm trees. Learn what to look for on today's show. From California News Service, we'll have a report on efforts to increase housing for seniors. President Joe Biden has rescinded a Trump-era ban on transgender people serving in the military. And from Public News Service, we'll have more national news stories, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi criticizing Republicans' appointment of Marjorie Greene to the Education Committee after Greene taunted a child survivor of the Sandy Hook School massacre. We'll also have news on more executive orders signed by President Biden, including reopening open enrollment in the Affordable Care Act health insurance, ending private prison contracts, and more. And then finally, we'll have some tips from San Diego District Attorney Summer Steffen and the FBI on how you can help keep your child or teen safe from predators online. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
At a press conference earlier this week, San Diego County leaders announced changes to allow some businesses to reopen after the state lifted a regional stay-home order. The change comes due to a four-week regional projection that ICU capacity will rise above 15%. Our county is now back in the purple tier, but with some modifications. A key change is that live entertainment is now allowed at restaurants, which can reopen for outdoor dining. Performers must be 12 feet from diners and other musicians. Wineries, bars, and distilleries that serve food can operate under restaurant rules, but those serving alcohol only must stay closed. Hair and nail salons, barbershops, tattoo parlors, and massage businesses can reopen for indoor service following COVID-safe protocols. Gatherings of three households or fewer are allowed outdoors with masks. Non-contact youth sports competitions can resume, such as track and field, golf, tennis, and swimming. Competitions are not allowed for contact youth sports, though teams can resume practice without direct contact, such as batting or fielding practice. Grocery stores can operate at 50% occupancy, retail at 25%, and hotels can reopen to the public. Certain other businesses, such as museums and drive-in theaters, can resume outdoor operations. Worship services can be held outdoors with masks and social distancing. Nathan Fletcher, chair of the County Board of Supervisors, stated, quote, "We can take a measure of pride in knowing that we've beaten back the most severe surge," end quote. New cases have dropped from over 4,000 daily to between 1,000 and 2,000 daily over the past week. But San Diego still has a long way to go to drop into the red tier, which would allow much broader reopening of businesses, a goal that can only be met if people avoid mass gatherings and continue to wear masks, wash hands, socially distance, and avoid risky behaviors. Although the post-holiday surge has passed, Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, cautions that there are new strains which spread more rapidly than the original strain of COVID-19. A great hope is rollout of vaccines, which are now available to people age 65 and up, as well as healthcare workers. Next will be frontline workers in childcare and education, first responders, and workers in food and agriculture. After that will likely be those age 50 to 64, Dr. Wooten says. In addition to super sites at Petco Park in Chula Vista, several other pod sites are now available across the county, including Grossmont Healthcare in East County. Reservations are required via the county's online site or by calling 211, though some seniors report difficulty getting appointments. Fletcher addressed a question from East County Magazine on county enforcement over potential super spreader events, such as an outdoor worship service in El Cajon that drew hundreds of people, most not wearing masks, including Mayor Bill Wells and Cajon Valley School Board member Jill Bartow. Fletcher responded, quote, "We understand there are a lot of forces out there, including elected officials advocating open defiance," end quote. He indicated that the county is investigating complaints and will issue cease and desist orders and, in some cases, public closure notices, following up through law enforcement as needed for businesses that do not comply. Dr. Wooten stated, quote, "There is an unfortunate irony that unsafe events only serve to increase the case count and punishes businesses and those who have lost loved ones." While the state's latest orders will bring some relief to beleaguered businesses, some argue that the changes don't go far enough. California Senate Republican leader Shannon Grove accused the governor of making a decision based on, quote, "secret data," while many businesses and schools have been shuttered for months. She adds, quote, "Californians deserve full transparency, especially when their life, livelihood, children's education, and mental health are being directly affected." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
The county's public health officer and many local residents are speaking out to criticize El Cajon's leadership after Mayor Bill Wells gave the opening prayer at a religious gathering on January 17th in Prescott Promenade downtown. The outdoor service drew hundreds of worshipers, nearly all of them without masks. The Let Us Worship Christian service and concert was organized by controversial evangelical musician Sean Fouched, a former Republican congressional candidate. He encouraged the crowd to yell as loudly as they could, despite medical evidence that singing and shouting at worship services has led to super spreader events and deaths. He also invited people to come on stage for a born-again ritual in which they were prayed over and hugged by faith leaders. The event was in direct violation of state and county COVID-19 regulations, held at a time when regional ICU capacity was zero and a stay-home order was in place due to surging COVID cases, including new rapidly spreading variants. The city did not issue a permit for the event. However, Mayor Wells has openly voiced support for defiance of regulations and told media previously that he asked the city manager to instruct police not to enforce violations of COVID-related health rules, such as businesses defying shutdown orders. El Cajon police officers were visibly present at the event, but they did nothing to shut it down or even enforce masking regulations. They also did not respond when a counter-protester dressed as the Grim Reaper was attacked and had his megaphone smashed. The San Diego Union-Tribune reports that the protester had been shouting, "How many people have you killed due to no mask at your events, Sean?" East County Magazine asked Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health official, for comments on the event during a county press conference this week. She stated, "There is an unfortunate irony that unsafe events only serve to increase the case count and punishes business and those who have lost loved ones." Nathan Fletcher, chair of the County Board of Supervisors, also voiced disapproval, but indicated the county is limited in its enforcement capacity in incorporated cities. "We understand there are a lot of forces out there, including elected officials advocating open defiance," Fletcher said. He indicated that the county is investigating complaints and will issue cease and desist orders or closure orders for businesses that fail to comply. But the county has not taken action to stop potential super spreader events, including an earlier worship concert staged by Fouched at a North County beach. Mayor Wells has defended his stance by stating that he believes people need hope after months of quarantine. And as a mental health professional, he says he's concerned about the high rates of suicides, depression, and other problems caused by isolation. We emailed the other four city council members in El Cajon to ask if they had any concerns or planned to take action to compel enforcement of COVID-19 rules. Three did not respond. A fourth, Gary Kendrick, said he is concerned but does not have the votes from any of his colleagues to take action. The public has mixed views on the matter. Mike Nelson of San Diego, who attended the event, told the Union Tribune he came after seeing lives changed and people getting saved and healed at similar events. But on Facebook, many El Cajon residents posted scathing criticisms. Donald Williams wrote, "The mayor is a shining example of why this pandemic, especially in El Cajon, will be uncontrolled until 2025. Linda Armacost said of those in attendance, "They may see God sooner than they expected." Several posted that they have stopped going to El Cajon to shop or to take out meals due to feeling unsafe because of the failure to enforce public health rules. Stacy Hoover praised San Diego's new mayor, Todd Gloria, who just announced increased enforcement actions in their city to assure compliance with COVID-19 rules. Hoover wrote, "Too bad he's not also mayor of El Cajon." She slammed El Cajon's mayor and other elected officials who attend the event, which she contends is killing people. "That is why my kids can't go to school," adds Hoover, a former candidate for the Cajon Valley School District Board. The district, in El Cajon, has had 540 cases since September 9th, according to the district's website. Jill Bartow, a trustee on the Cajon Valley School Board, attended the religious rally, not wearing a mask, and posted photos on her Facebook page. Steve Roback, an elected member of the Lakeside Water District, scornfully dismissed concerns voiced by many over the lack of masks. On Facebook, he likened those who wear masks to sheep and taunted, "Bah, do as you're told." El Cajon has had 10,373 cases of COVID-19 since the pandemic began last March. The city's cases account for 4.8% of the county's total cases. El Cajon also has the second highest case rate in the county, with 9,826.7 cases per every 100,000 residents. In other words, nearly one in every 10 people in El Cajon is confirmed to have had the coronavirus. But perhaps that's not surprising, given the city's abandonment of its responsibility to protect the public health amid the worst pandemic in over a century. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
La Mesa will soon have a community garden, slated to open in March. The city recently announced that the San Diego Foundation has granted $30,000 in seed money for the community garden, which will be located in MacArthur Park near the community center and La Mesa's downtown village. Another $10,000 in donations came from the San Diego chapter of the American Society of Landscape Architects, La Mesa Sunrise Rotary, the Cushman Foundation, EDCO, and a Laurie McDonald at Coldwell Banker West. Josh Slotnick at a TED Talks from the University of Montana said of his time as an apprentice at the UC Santa Cruz Farm and Garden,
"It was the best educational experience I'd ever had. I was elevated by it. I never before felt so in tune with people and place. It was like I grew 2 inches and I was 26 years old."
According to Michelle Langdon, participants will be required to follow city guidelines for COVID-19. The garden beds will be 6 feet apart from each other to keep social distancing. Sanitation for shared tools will also be provided. Due to COVID-19 guidelines, in-person educational workshops and events will not be available, but the city is, however, considering creating some online alternatives. The public will be offered year-long leases through a lottery system. There will also be guidelines about what community members are allowed to plant in the garden. The garden is continuing to fundraise and has currently reached about 40% of its goal. For more information about the community garden or to donate to the fundraiser, visit lamesaparks.org/community-garden. Reporting from La Mesa, this is Jonathan Getz.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea. Public interest news for our region.
This is Brianna Gomez with the Health Alert. Over half of all hand sanitizers from Mexico have been found to contain toxic ingredients, many at dangerous levels, and 84% of samples tested failed to comply with FDA regulations. So on January 26th, the FDA announced a nationwide import alert on all hand sanitizers made in Mexico to prevent them from entering the U.S. until the agency can review product safety. This is the first time the FDA has issued a countrywide alert for any category of drug product. Many of the Mexican-made hand sanitizers contain methanol or wood alcohol, which is toxic when absorbed through the skin and life-threatening if ingested, or propanol, another dangerous substance. The FDA reports methanol poisoning from these products has caused blindness, heart trouble, effects on the central nervous system, hospitalizations, and death. Although people using these products on their hands are at risk for methanol poisoning, young children who ingest these products or adults who drink these products believing them to be alcohol substitutes are most at risk. Consumers exposed to hand sanitizer contaminated with methanol and are experiencing symptoms should contact their local poison control center and seek immediate medical treatment for potential reversal of the toxic side effects of methanol poisoning. Call 911 if the person is unconscious or has trouble breathing. To find a local poison control center, call Poison Help at 800-222-1222. The FDA encourages healthcare professionals, consumers, and patients to report adverse events or quality problems experienced with the use of hand sanitizers to FDA's MedWatch Adverse Event Reporting Program.
This is Jonathan Goetz with East County Magazine's Agricultural Report. The invasive South American palm weevil has destroyed an estimated 10,000 palm trees in our region, according to researcher Mark Hoddle at the University of California, Riverside. Locally, it's been found in El Cajon, Bonita, San Diego, and South Bay communities. The destructive weevil was first found in our region in 2010 in Tijuana, Mexico, and has since spread across our county and into Arizona. In San Diego County, the pest is primarily infesting Canary Islands date palms since its discovery here in 2011, but it is known to attack other species when Canary Islands date palms are not available. Left untreated, it will ultimately kill the iconic trees, best known for lining waterfronts along some of San Diego's most prominent waterfront tourist destinations. The adult South American palm weevils are black with wings. They measure about 1.5 inches long. Larvae are white and pupate in fibrous brown cocoons in the infested crown of the palm tree or in tunnels drilled by the insects into the base of palm fronds. Deep Look, in A Real Alien Invasion Is Coming to a Palm Tree Near You, puts it like this.
She lays her eggs down in those tunnels, and her spawn eat the palm from the inside out.
Early symptoms include damage to fronds emerging from the center of a palm tree's crown. Leaflets may appear clipped or notched. Once the palm heart is heavily damaged, the crown may tilt or collapse, dropping to the ground and posing a hazard to anyone underneath. So far, the only way to save the palms once infested is to apply systematic pesticides on a regular basis, though this may pose hazards to any wildlife that feeds on any part of the palm. Testing of several pesticides is currently underway. Consultation with an arborist is recommended. Removal of an infected palm tree is a more environmentally friendly option. Besides posing a threat to ornamental palms, state agricultural officials are concerned that the pest could spread to the Coachella Valley or other commercial date-growing areas, which produce $68 million worth of dates annually in California. Residents are asked to report any palms suspected of having South American palm weevils to the County Department of Agriculture and to researchers at the University of California, Riverside.
California faces an enormous shortage of affordable housing, and a group that advocates for older residents is looking for solutions. This week, AARP California has published a new report on the need for housing. It's the result of months spent convening experts and stakeholders to tackle the issue of affordability. AARP California Associate State Director Rafi Nazarians says the state can shore up support for affordable housing by reinvigorating the social compact between generations.
It refers to an implicit agreement between generations to share resources and support one another across phases of life.
The report found there's a strong perception that older adults tend to oppose affordable housing projects in their areas when they come up for local approval. AARP wants to reframe the issue, hoping to increase support among its millions of members for projects that allow everyone in a community to thrive. Nazarians says the research shows red tape is another huge obstacle to getting new housing approved and built because it can take years to comply with a thicket of environmental, land use, and zoning regulations.
The largest area of consensus was on the need for a much simplified process at all levels of government and at all junctures of development of affordable housing in California.
And the demand for affordable housing specifically designed for older adults is likely to increase. Statistics show by 2030, 1 in 3 Californians will be over age 50 and 17% will be over age 65. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, January the 28th, 2021. I'm Mike Clifford. CNN reports Speaker Nancy Pelosi Thursday slammed House Republican leaders for not doing more to rebuke GOP Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia over her shocking rhetoric and past statements. At her weekly news conference, Pelosi said, assigning her to the Education Committee when she has mocked the killing of little children at Sandy Hook Elementary School, when she has mocked the killing of teenagers in high school at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, what could they be thinking? This is PNS.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're tracking our democracy in historic times. President Joe Biden signed another executive order yesterday, this time for health care.
To undo the damage Trump has done. There's nothing new that we're doing here other than restoring the Affordable Care Act and restoring the Medicaid.
First, Biden is reopening enrollment in the ACA marketplaces to give more people a chance to get health insurance. Over 2.2 million lost theirs in the first 3 years of the Trump administration. The new period starts February 15th and is open till May 15th. The Biden administration is also reviewing former President Donald Trump policies, undermining protections for those with pre-existing medical conditions. Biden has told federal agencies to revise the Trump policies that made it harder to qualify for Medicaid, the public health insurance program for people with disabilities or low incomes, including potentially removing states' work requirements.
Of all times that we need to reinstate access to, affordability of, and extent of access to Medicaid, is now in the middle of this COVID crisis.
Medicaid enrollment has risen since the pandemic began, after dropping between 2017 and 2019, attributed to reduced funding for public outreach. Biden's executive order this week ending the federal use of private prisons did not include privately run immigration facilities, where the ACLU says, as of a year ago, 81% of people detained in ICE custody were held. One of the nation's largest is the Northwest ICE Processing Center in Tacoma, Washington. Marumora Villalpando is a community organizer with the group La Resistencia.
This is not the solution to the immigration detention enterprise that has been built. And now we have to push him and his entire administration to start phasing out private detention and ultimately close all detention centers.
Looking ahead, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi says she hopes to move a COVID relief package forward quickly.
I'll bring a budget resolution to the floor next week, and then it will send it over to the Senate. By the end of the week, we will be finished with the budget resolution, which will be about reconciliation, if needed. I hope we don't need it, but if needed, we will have it.
Budget reconciliation is a procedure which lets the Senate pass legislation with a simple majority, rather than the usual 60 votes required to end debate and get to a vote. It's only for bills that focus on federal budgetary spending or taxes and cannot include unrelated provisions. Yesterday, House Republican leader California's Kevin McCarthy met with former President Donald Trump in Florida to discuss the twice-impeached politician's plans for the 2022 midterm elections. After record-low approval ratings following the Capitol insurrection, a morning consult and Politico poll this week had 50% of Republican voters saying Trump should play a major role in the GOP going forward. Eric Tegedoff contributed reporting. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Laura Rosbrow-Tellum. Thanks for listening.
LGBTQ plus groups are celebrating President Biden's executive order reversing a Trump-era ban on transgender people in the military. The ban, which took effect in April 2019, prevented transgender people from enlisting, joining ROTC, or attending military academies. Rick Chavez-Zbur is with Equality California, which sued to stop the ban. He says the policy hurt individuals and the nation as a whole.
It was also harmful to the country because it deprived our country of talent and really harmed military readiness.
Former President Trump imposed the ban in July 2017, but it was tied up in litigation for 2 years until the Supreme Court allowed it to take effect. Trump argued that the military should not have to pay for people to go through the transition. Samuel Garrett Pate, also with Equality California, notes that a 2016 study by the Rand Corporation found that the costs of allowing transgender people to serve are negligible.
It's really sort of a red herring. The military covers the cost of health care for service members, period, full stop, and transgender people shouldn't be denied care any more than any other service member.
A UCLA study estimated that there were more than 15,000 transgender people on active duty as of 2014. The order also requires the Department of Defense to correct the record of anyone dismissed for their gender identity. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
San Diego District Attorney Summer Steffen warns that students who are spending more time online due to distance learning and COVID-19 are a captive audience for would-be human traffickers making contact on social media. So it's important to educate children and prevent them from falling victim to predators. Take these red flags seriously if your child or teen starts acting secretively, hiding what's on their computer screens or closing the door when online, if they talk vaguely of new friends without details, if they seem agitated when answering their phone or take calls in private, if they sneak out of the house, arrive home late, or lie about where they've been and who they've been with. Dressing up and wearing makeup to look older can be another red flag. So are unexplained expensive gifts such as money or clothes. Children and adolescents often do not feel vulnerable or understand what risks they may face from online or in-person victimization. The FBI recommends that parents review and approve games and apps before they are downloaded. Make sure privacy settings are set to the strictest level possible for social media, online gaming systems, phones, and other devices. Monitor your child's use of the internet and keep computers in a non-private room. Explain to your child that images posted online most likely will remain on the internet permanently. Teach your child about personal boundaries and awareness of their surroundings. And encourage open child-parent communication about internet safety. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Priebel, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine show here on KNSJ. I want to take a moment to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to hear our show, where we report news that matters to people across our region. In an era of cuts to many major media outlets, shrinking local news coverage, and cries of fake news attacking journalists with courage to report the truth, it's important to recognize and support KNSJ Radio. KNSJ gives airtime for original reporting on issues that matter here in San Diego and East County, as well as national news that impacts people here at home. You can donate to help support real news, honest reporting, and inclusion of your community's views and voices at knsj.org. That website again is knsj.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea. Public interest news for our region.